correct balance going in our current time between the requirements of competitivity, meaning support for the economy, and in recognition of the fact that the private sector has not come back, if you like, fully into its role in the economy, and government has still played an important investment, consumption, and driving job creation role. So that's what countercyclicality is about. And on the other hand, a commitment to medium-term consolidation on the fiscal side, which means that we are still committed to bringing the deficit down. We are still committed to ensuring, the second point, that our debt levels are sustainable over the longer term. We are not worried by the current level of debt, but we do understand that we require to reignite inclusive growth in South Africa. 2.1% level is not adequate for the number of jobs we need to create and the number of enterprises we need to create and the increase in the tax base that we need to create. So the first is the balance between countercyclicality and medium-term consolidation. The second is that we want to put our debt on a sustainable long-term path, which means create space in our fiscal framework for us to spend more in the right areas, not just on interest on debt, and make sure we create the space in the event that we have another crisis to deal with, as we certainly will in some time ahead of us. The third message is we are absolutely intent upon, both currently and in the near future, implementing the National Development Plan, and in the speech we gave many examples of that, because that's part of creating a proper growth environment in South Africa. The fourth is to work with both the private sector and the labor movement and other sectors of our society to keep our focus quite strenuously on reigniting inclusive growth and developing a complementarity between public investment and private sector investment in our economy, and both local investment and foreign investment in our economy. And this is crucial because we can't just squeeze ourselves on the expenditure side. We need to broaden the revenue side. And the way you broaden the revenue side is by increasing the growth of this economy. And there are, I think, all sorts of possibilities available to us to take the economy in a different direction if we as a collective in South Africa apply our minds to that. And what is key, Chairperson, is that we've got to end the finger pointing. This is a common project. This is a common purpose that we need to develop amongst ourselves if we are to take this country on a different path. And it's useful to remind ourselves, as IMF and many others remind us of, that in South Africa, about 8% of the employment comes from the private sector, and about 70% of our economy is driven by the private sector. And it's this relationship between public and private sector which is absolutely crucial to set the balance right as we go forward. The third point is support job creation and skills development in our economy, in particular the unemployed youth. So expenditure in the key publicly funded job creation areas is more or less sustained during this period, but the effort to encourage skills development is reinforced by the various programs we have and intend to have. We also believe that the so-called double deficit that we have, the current account and the fiscal deficit, one that we need to be very self-aware of. We believe that the flexible exchange rate that we have gives us a buffer against the possible turbulence that we might have from international events. Over the last few months, there have been lots of engagements, both in the G20 and in the IMF context, between emerging markets, including South Africa, and advanced economies, including the United States, to get across the message that we do live in an interconnected world and that steps taken, both positive and negative, by big economies have spillover effects on others. You've heard us talk about this before. But there's certainly, and we're happy to note, a greater awareness of the spillover effects, the necessity to communicate more clearly, for example, on quantitative easing and tapering, and to manage any financial turbulence that might arise, which could have a negative impact, as you've seen, on many countries across the globe. The last is that we will continue on the expenditure side to look for opportunities to save money, to reprioritize money, but more importantly, to align our expenditure with programs of the National Development Plan, and take some tough decisions, if need be, to either tailor down certain programs or cut programs so that we can get investment in the right areas. And, of course, you're all aware of some of the other issues that we made announcements on yesterday. So let me stop there in general terms, Chairperson, and ask the Director General to take you through some of the key numbers in the slides before you and let them get around.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Co-Chairs, and unfortunately, I understand you've got copies. I can
our copies?
Yes. I intend to talk to possibly about six slides. The first one is on page 6. It's number 11. The slide just summarizes the growth part of the story contained in the medium-term budget policy statement. It indicates, as the Minister pointed out, that we anticipate that after the revisions this year, growth will be 2.1, but it will accelerate over the medium term to reach 3.5 by the third year of the MTF. We expect that a big part of this is going to be driven by stronger growth over time in gross fixed capital formation. The table on the slide just summarizes GDP. It summarizes the gross domestic product, so to speak. First line is household consumption. It shows, the table shows that after slowing down somewhat to around 2.5% for this year, household consumption is expected to reach 3% or thereabout next year, and 2.4 thereafter. I'm not going to talk to each number like that. So the table, you know, summarizes our GDP. The most important line, which I was referring to, I would say, for purposes of really sustaining growth and making sure that our economy can grow faster in the future, is that gross fixed capital formation line. The creation of the stock of capital in this economy, which is a significant determinant of growth, if we invest in the right components thereof at the right prices over the next 3 years. The next slide then, which is 12, just summarizes the factors, and it's a summary, not a comprehensive and exhaustive list, that will support growth. The first one is that the global conditions are expected to contribute to this, with the U.S. situation normalizing, hopefully even when it reaches January next year, if the United States political office bearers find each other, and therefore the risks associated with debt ceiling and so on from that end are resolved, we would expect that then things will get better. China, to becoming a significant economy, standing at number two now, plays a very important role in global growth for us, especially for our exports of commodities. now that they sit at around 15% of our account for our 15% of our export income. And of course, with the currency somewhat weak, that should support export. And of course, if you just go to the last bullet, if we implement the NDP and do so diligently, overcome our infrastructure constraints, build the right infrastructure, overcome the skills constraints, then we can expect that we will do better as a country. The next slide on the fiscal stance, very important aspect of the MGP, the SMG, we just reiterate the underpinnings of our fiscal stance, the principle of counter-cyclicality, that we continue to support the economy whenever it's affected by all of these developments globally and domestically, which tend to pull it down. Of course, the amount of support, the extent of that support has come down quite considerably because of the capacity to do it, because also we are mindful that we've got to honor the second principle of debt sustainability. We cannot allow a situation to arise where our debt levels in absolute terms as a percentage of GDP continue to rise and thus magnify the risk of being unsustainable. It's not there at all, but the idea is to make sure that it never gets there. Connected to the third principle of intergenerational fairness, a very important principle, which is about ensuring that it never happens that we accumulate debt today and do so using the resources that we raise through that borrowing to finance today's consumption, because then we shall be leaving future generations with debt only and no assets to generate income to service that debt, which would be a very difficult situation for them. Of course, in this environment that I described in the earlier slide, the medium-term budget policy statement seeks to, or set out a framework that seeks to achieve three fiscal goals: moderate expenditure growth of about 2%, ensure that our debt starts to stabilize by around 2016-17, and of course make sure that for every rent that we spend, we derive the maximum benefit from it. Public expenditure are prioritized in a way that supports investment. I will now jump to what is the main business of the MGPPS, which is on slide, on page 8, slide number 16. Page 8, slide number 16, the bottom one, which set out the consolidated fiscal framework. One of the main, if not the main objective of the medium-term budget statement. There, we set out the operating account, which is a kind of new way to present all the information, and of course at the bottom, the capital account. If you look at the top block of that table, we show the revenue that will be collected from all kinds of sources. For this year, it's sitting at 998. It will rise to around 1.3 trillion by the third year of the MGF. Of what we shall be spending the money on, current payments, the biggest proportion of which is compensation of employees, the salaries, which this year is expected to come out at 409 billion and will rise to 498 over the period. If you come down, just go down the table, you will see the current balance there, also expected as a percentage of GDP, that by next year it is equivalent to zero, which means that we will not be borrowing to finance our operational expenditure, and beyond that we will start to actually run a current surplus and therefore only borrow to finance capital expenditure. Of course, if you then go down the table, we have a very important thing, and it will be the last one that I will draw the attention of the committee to, which is the budget balance. Expected to be 144 billion this year, or 4.2% of GDP. The change in the way of presenting the budget then becomes significant when we look at that 4.2%. In February, we were talking about a figure of 4.6. That 4.2 compares to 4.6. The improvement is not because there has been too much revenue or there has been a cut in expenditure. That's true, but the biggest change occurs as a result of the change in the way we present it. What we used not to include above the line, what we used not to net out, which is extraordinary receipts and extraordinary payments, are now included there. And they have been positive, in which case they reduce the amount that we have got to finance. And it's 4.2, and you can see them how it changes over the next 3 years. And that is explained on the next page, slide 17, but now that I've explained it, I will not bore you by repeating it. What I will do instead is to jump to the last slide. I will present the last slide on the on page 13, slide 25. Page 13, slide 25. For the title, something that looks round, but the title of this is.
I'd like to win a Danish drive. And
I just want to make sure that I'm understood. I used to be a teacher. There's a little profession I can pay about a 50 degree. Everything else I'm pretending. It's a division of revenue that is set out there. I think it's a significant thing for the committee to at least see. It is set out neatly in the MGBPS. Let me just draw the attention of the House to three numbers now. Of the amount of revenue that I had referred to earlier on, just over a trillion on the other page, earlier pages, national government will be allocated 47.4% of that. That will be the share of national revenue. We know that goes to a whole range of national functions. Security and the justice cluster being, I think, collectively one of the biggest ones. These days, social security grants are up there as well. So those will be in that 47.4 billion percent. I apologize. And if you look to the left hand side of that pie chart, provinces will be getting 43.5%, and of course we know that they deliver education, they deliver health, both functions that are highly personnel intensive. So a lot of the resources that they have received go to additional resources that have been allocated would go to, of course, covering inflation-related adjustments to salaries, which as members would recall, as per the last agreement, were indexed to inflation. In other words, the CPI plus one, and CPI, as we know, had turned out to be higher than one that was embedded in the fiscal framework at the time when we budgeted. The local government is getting quite a fair share of this 9.1%. Always very important to look at that local government share against the background of the fact that local government is largely self-financing. Local government delivers services that lend themselves to cost recovery, electricity, water, sanitation, refuse removal, the things that we see in our municipal bills. So they receive services from providers like water boards or whoever is supplying them, ESCOM, energy, and of course they pass service to consumers, and of course they recover then part of money. They get 9.1. I mean, even their share of national revenue is rising in line with the increasing importance of local government and the role that they will be expected to play in the period ahead. I'm not talking about the changes to grants which are aimed at incentivizing good planning, liberating the bigger municipalities, metros, from the rigorous kind of compliance that gets enforced by national government, making sure that they can be allowed to run their businesses a bit better. Of course, they will have to be monitored to comply with that. I'm not going to get into those things, but they will be set out in the explanation memorandum. I must pause there, sir, before I bore you too much detail. Thank you very much.
Are you done? Thank you to Vanessa and the Director General. Tomorrow, on Great Island COP, there will be a joint meeting of the Standing and Select Committee of Appropriations dealing with the amendments to the Division of Revenue as well as the Appropriations. So, just some sense of those members on that. Thank you. It's all about development. And we will have to ask ourselves a question also about the viral in this whole process. As an employee by my party to this institution, the National Legislature, and to presidential legislators in the government. What are we going to do to take South Africa forward? As the minister said to Sirkri, can we do it? And he gave the answer, yes we can. South Africa, but it's a very small of the species. Concerning the issue of the minister, and we dealt intensively with provinces, is a question of unauthorized expenditure. Page 24 of the NTPDS that was labeled yesterday, there are a plan to crack down on unauthorized expenditure as stated in the NTPDS. We will support Treasury in this regard as well. Honourable members, we go straight to the questions. Honourable Koornhof, last, he made a proposal of a cognac, which he works on the table today. Mr. Swart, number one. Mr. Swart, number two. Mr. Niels van Rooyen, he's from the Free State. Die kerkkap in elk gehaal nie, maar straf wil herres. Robert Adams, will you hand up? Nou, on the lease, recognize him.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just my congratulations to the Minister and his team. I'm going to ask a little bit what the newspapers are full of today. If I look at the Cape Artists, they say warm perks. The Times says happy hour over. The Cape Times say Gordon's warm perks. The Beer say the party stop here. And the Business Day runs the only sort of medium-term budget policy statement headlines, but the second largest is first class and good hotels off the menu. Minister, I think I want to support you on that. I think it was overdue for a long time, unfortunately. It's good that you bring it now. It's a little bit sad that he's stealing all the thunder. Of course, it's unfair to what's happening in South Africa out of an economic point of view. But the ban on alcohol, I'm not happy with. Let me tell you why. I think it's a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction. I think it was good to say all imported alcohol out, all hard liquor out. But you turn on the wine industry, the only industry on the continent of Amsterdam, to say that you can run a residential guest house, a state banquet, you can run a hedge of missions with the foreign minister of this country will wine and die. You look at Parliament, and you think you cannot serve South African wine. If we take it abroad to say that you cannot serve South African broad in London, New York, and our missions, it is just, for me, unthinkable. And I think, you know, if I can plead to you, if you're going to do the exemptions, just do that list and bear that in mind. We are in huge competition with the rest of the world, and our wives are our ambassadors. If I take that grape tie, a sovereign, it costs probably more than a beer in the mountains. So it's about savings. Let's be just fair, and not only against wine or for our own profits. And then, Minister, on another topic, you were very hard on Minister. But you let the retired ministers go away. They've got a very good benefit with regard to retired members flying, you know, travel purpose. I think it's time to look at that as well. And then finally, on the debt, stabilizing 2016-17. I think 2 years ago you were promising us it will stabilize next year. Can we have some sort of guarantee that you will not put it out in March or now?
Thank you, Deputy. And just from our side as well, congratulations to you, Minister, and your team for the budget policy statement. Just following on my colleague and the a lot of attention that has been given to the cutting back of perks, which we do support. But what type of figure are you looking to save to that? And yes, it would be an estimate. And if not insignificant, whilst we appreciate any saving, but insignificant in the broader picture when one has widespread corruption, and surely you've also spent a lot of time speaking about that corruption, procurement corruption, where we're talking about tens of billions of rands per year. In that context, I would also like you just to comment on your further attempts to address procurement and the progress of the Chief Procurement Officer working together with other law enforcement agencies. And secondly, just on the very firm commitment that you gave to implement the National Development Plan, which we all support, but we know that there are certain trade unions that are still very opposed to the economic chapter, and we also appreciate the fact that we're all in this together. How are we going to get the trade unions on board so that we have that cohesion between all the partners to ensure the successful and speedy implementation of the National Development Plan? Lastly, Minister, just on the, we now see, as my colleague has pointed out, the outer year, the new outer year, 2016-17, where we've now got a total net loan debt of 43.9%. And whilst our deficit is on 4.2% looking at, and is scheduled to go down depending on economic, but clearly when we're looking at the large amounts, we're looking at a 1.9 trillion in that outside year, which is almost 2 trillion rand, and is that not a cause of concern? And how does that impact on our debt consolidation path? I appreciate that our SADC target is 60% of GDP, but it places a massive pressure upon the state, and in particular, it removes, as we all know, it takes money away from service delivery when we have to deal with debt service costs. How is that in line with our principles of debt sustainability and intergenerational equity? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just to follow on this, you know, we, on the Minister, we're using a lot of money in terms of irregular wasteful expenditure. And I think the large degree we describe that to the fact that we have ineffective internal audit committees. They're not the topic. But I would like to just know from the Minister what the current status is of the Chief Procurement Officer so that we can start curbing those interests.
Now, Chief Procurement Officer is the Chief. We also welcome Mrs. Malachain, the new appointed DTG for Intergovernmental Relations. Welcome.
Minister, in the MTDP, reference is made a few times to the fact that that you say that South Africa should not rely on the global economy to be the main driver of domestic growth. Can the Minister just elaborate a bit more on that? Because you also then this afternoon emphasized that private sector is still not fully back with us,
so I just wanted you to other thing the minister said was quite interesting. He said there are all sorts of options available to us to put us on a higher growth path if we work together. What are those options? Because, Chair, the MTP of this year was quite light on new proposals. And that's a problem, not because everything that's traditionally in the NDVP is always implemented, but this October budget has always been a chance to float new policies and to discuss options like the Minister mentioned that could be available to us to put us on a higher growth path. And if, I think if there was one major problem with this budget, it's that it didn't do that. But now that the Minister has led this as an issue, can he take the committee through some of those options? It would only be available if we start working together. Then, Chair, on the second major problem with this budget, and that is the growth issue in South Africa. The debt consolidation forecast for 2016 on slide 21 is contingent on the growth forecast of 3 for 2014, 3.2 for 2015, 3.5 for 2016. So what Treasury is saying is they anticipate growth to pick up in the next 3 years. But I took a look at the growth forecast for 2013 that we made 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, Treasury told us that we would be growing at 4.4% right now. That's about twice the rate that we are growing. It's the rate, incidentally, that other emerging markets are growing at, Chile, Turkey, and Malaysia. They face the same global circumstances as we do. In those global circumstances, they are able to double the growth rate that we have. Nevertheless, 2 years ago, we thought that's where we would be growing at now. Last year, we thought we'd be growing at 3.6. But we're not, sure. We're growing at 2.1. My question is, given that we've been so wrong in recent years, projecting forward 2 or 3 years for growth, how can this committee trust that the debt consolidation will kick in 2016 based on those growth that historically have proved to be optimistic? And I would say the reason those have proven to be optimistic is because the minister hasn't been able to implement real reforms in the face of opposition from the ruling party's tripartite alliance partners. And unfortunately, there was no initiative in this budget to do that. So there was a lip service behind the NDP, which is important. It's important for the minister to show politically belief behind the NDP. But actually implementing some of the regulatory reform within the NDP, removing some of the barriers to trade that are in the NDP. Where is that, Jefferson? That's the main thing missing in this budget, and that makes me think that we are overestimating growth again, and that makes me think that I'm increasingly concerned about our debt situation. Without the growth, we can't pay that money. Chair, on achieving this year's deficit target, we've done it for two reasons. One, because we've spent the entire contingency reserve. There's no money in the bank for a rainy day. What happens if something goes seriously wrong that we can't anticipate now, between now and February? What does South Africa look like if we have no contingency reserve? And how do we deal with unanticipated circumstances? The other reason why we managed to do this is because we relied on 3.5 billion rand underspending by government departments. So it's a bizarre situation here. You managed to hit the deficit target because your government doesn't have the capacity to spend the money that you give them. I think if we take out that contingency reserve and the underspending, we would have a serious problem on the deficit. On the issue of the day, as Honourable Cummins said, the belt tightening, so what should these measures apply to the presidency? We were all, as the committee called, a little bit more bugged by this because the actual speech wasn't distributed, I guess because Cabinet was busy signing off these very welcome proposals. But the actual budget document says that these cost-constrained measures will be introduced in February. Am I correct in saying they will now be introduced in December? And then secondly, would it not be... would some of the big benefits not be in cutting the bailouts to save those entities, which simply dwarf the works available to ministers? Chair, the last point on this recalibration of the deficit measure. I haven't had a chance to look at the IMF's Global Financial Statistics Manual, but I'm deeply concerned by this change. Chair. The way I see it, if you include extraordinary receipts, in your budget balance, you can essentially sell off the family children to make your budget balance in the year. Bottom line is, I know it's different, but NCBP is expensive, where capitalization of core public assets may be required. Other measures such as upfront disposal of non-core assets will be considered. Obviously, as a DA, we also look at privatization as a way of generating revenue and of introducing some private sector bigger investors to the SOEs. But the point of change is sell off the state assets. That should be used to pay off debt, not to make a budget for a single year. If this is really what the IMF shares, I'm afraid they've got a problem. It distorts our budgets. If we sell 10 billion rands worth of assets, it won't be hard in a single year. We can essentially reduce our budget deficit by 1% in that year. And that's done these sort of things gone. To make a single year bad budget doesn't make any sense. The way we look at it is much more accurate.
Emissions, the renewable energy projects. where the Treasury speaks about spending on coal-fired power stations. It's the same, I mean, Treasury, we spoke about the issue of to reduce carbon emissions and also introducing tax carbon. However, the question therefore becomes that, I mean, we've supported the issue of reduction of consultants, but how do we assure savings be invested in creating specifics on the issue of renewable energy? How, what is your thought on that? The last question is on the issue about times being very tough and government market spending where possible. However, what are we doing around the issue of household spending, specifically around the issue of the household incurring a lot of debt when we are sitting? What is our view around us assisting the poor to ensure we reduce the issue of household spending, but also them incurring too much debt? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and your question. Chair, I would like to take this opportunity to actually thank the Honourable Minister together with his team for being realistic and very consistent with the growth rate. Because if that we do not determine or achieve, then we're gonna start panicking. But so far I think it's a very comfortable zone. And I would like to say then thank you. And then secondly, also Chair, to say to the National Treasury, they've really assisted us on this new format where the extraordinary payments and receipts were included. Because by so doing, then we were able to say, where are we sitting? How do we arrive at a balance, at a budget balance? And as a result, we are asking one offering to, and for that really, it needs to be like applauded. It is an achievement. Now, having said that, you know, Chair, it becomes very difficult to understand the economy. Now, having said that, Chair, I want to go to slide 25, which was presented in the evening. I understand the allocation of 43.5%. And I'm assuming that as the department you arrive on that one using the executive shares. Now, I know that statistics you are receiving from the SEP department or SEP, I know that. But I am proposing that it may not be now or February, but coming from KwaZulu-Natal with a 12 million population, you know, when you look at these sectors, the health, the education, and we have used the equitable share, which is 43.5, and you look at their, at the sector population, now that some, it really creates some, like, if the departments are not performing because the FedSA does not give that information of like education, of schools, of health, the population thereof within those sectors. Now, what I'm requesting is that can you apply your mind around that the very speaker, because now we keep on hearing the sound of the government is not performing. And then other things of your good and equitable shift. And that information then it's not a complete information. That's my request.
This will be the last.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. The question of the extraordinary receipts was one that Honourable Harris has dealt with, amongst others, but so mine is more technical. Could the DG explain to me exactly how that figure of, I think it was 5 billion and 5.9 billion, those two figures were around there, in terms of bonds and revaluation. I'm just a simple bookkeeper. If I could have an explanation there, because if one looks at slide 17, and of course the documents where you get the amount for extraordinary receipts falls off dramatically in the coming 3 years. So as a consequence, your deficits growth, and so it's now at 4.3 coincidentally this year because we've adjusted terms of IMF's regulations, but then it jumps up to 4.5 in 2014-15 because the amount on extraordinary receipts drops from 11 billion to 1 billion. Whereas in prior years, it was climbing, 3 billion, 5 billion, 11 billion, 11 billion again this year, and then down to 1 billion, 800 million. And so it drops to virtually nothing in the final year. So what exactly is that? The question of intergenerational debt is a vexed question, because many will argue that this generation is making an undue contribution to future generations through the funding of plants and through tariffs that are too high. And so it's not a simple argument, this whole intergenerational debt thing. But the fact is that to some extent, future debts, or the benefits that will accrue to future generations, are being funded from current fiscal. And so I think that has a negative impact both on current generation and future generations in the form of a depressing effect on investment and growth in the economy. And so whilst there is a good argument to say we shouldn't burden future generations overly, if we spend too much now, we depress the economy, which has a very, very long-term impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
On the leash, we're going to end the questions there. All the members, it's 1:30. There's about 27 issues raised by 9 honorable members, and we have to be seated in the House of 1-2. So, honorable minister, you can be invited to
let the sprint start. I'm just going to allocate some of the questions, just because of response. Mr. Brown, there have been a couple of questions on the CPO, which you have already answered those. Mr. Bolivar, there's a couple of questions on debt. Mr. Nene, there's a question whether you're only giving lip service to the NDP, and there's two of my questions related to that. Mr. Donaldson, admin prices, tax collision, electricity prices, successor monopoly price, carbon tax, I will handle Mr. Mahonia, household spending, and what are we doing about some of the challenges that we face currently. Let me start on a more general note, and I'll come back at the end, Chairperson, as well. We hear Mr. Kornow on the wine industry, and we'll ask the relevant people to consider his plea. The retired ministers, I haven't retired yet, so I don't know what the perks are, actually. But let me look into that. He can whisper in my ear a little bit later. On the debt and growth issues, more broadly speaking, there is no magic on the growth side. I referred you several times to Professor Spence and his growth commission before. And quite simply, on the one hand, we've got to provide macroeconomic stability, which we attempt to do, and there's enough proof of it over the last 19 years. Secondly, we've got the National Development Plan, which has any number of projects, which are in the first instance enablers, if you like, energy, transport, skill development, integration, and Mr. will come back to that in a moment. Trying to score cheap political scores by saying lip service and so on, election campaign hasn't been quite declared yet. But those are useless goals because they're own goals at the end of the day. So the proof is there in the pudding, if I may add. So growth is going to be a combination of factors. The stability at a macro level, the investment we make in the economy now, the enablers that we actually put into place. Some of the things will be driven by government programs. Slide 12 gives you some indication of what some of those factors are. We need to be looking through it. But more importantly is that all of us, wherever we are, labor, business, and government, need to become growth-focused and ensure that through the growth process, the bottom 40% of our people benefit from this process as well. So we've got lots of pundits in South Africa these days who will criticize government policy, largely because they want to ignore the poor. Let's be frank about that. So we must ask ourselves tough questions about these so-called analysts and commentators. and the kind of economic vantage point from which they approach some of these questions. They must declare their interest. If they are representing sectoral interest, they will say so. And say, I represent this industry or this sector, and that's why I take this view. These guys are not all neutral with respect to Jefferson. So they represent particular interests, and in this case, we worry about those who, implicitly or otherwise, start saying, the poor don't matter. Just grow this economy so that those who currently benefit continue to benefit. So it's a danger that we have to be careful about. Secondly, there's a link between growth and deficit and debt management, which several colleagues have raised. This is not just about squeezing. So look at page 24 of the MPBTS and the graph that it contains. In the period leading up to and including 2009, real growth in expenditure in 2009-10 of 11.5%. What happened after that? And how do we see the process beyond that? It is systematically cut down in real terms. But you're still retaining, as I mentioned earlier on, a real growth in expenditure of 2.2%. If we don't grow, all we're going to do is either tax more or cut more, you know, on the expenditure side, and we'll be on a downward slide. So the ultimate formula, there's no guarantees that anybody can give. In 2008, nobody could have given you a guarantee there will never be a recession in the next 2 years. True? Right? These things come as shocks to the system. So the question is, are we as an economy resilient enough to manage those shocks? In 2008-09, we were. So the reason we need to get back to better debt management and deficit management and grow the economy is so that we can manage any future shocks that might come our way. And as a government, I think we say now in the speech yesterday, we'll do what it takes to get there. Page 24 is evidence of that. That we haven't been shy about cutting on the expenditure side if that is necessary. But then to also make claims like the contingency reserve is spent, it's gone. Look at slide 16. We're rebuilding it. We are rebuilding the contingency reserve over the next 3 years. So, I don't know. Either we need spectacles or we need to take another vantage point on some of these issues. Then on Mr. Swart's point around, Mr. Brown will respond to that. The NDP, Mr. Nene, as I said, will respond to that. The debt consolidation part, let me hand over to the DG in a moment. Mr. Van Rooyen, relying on the global economy, the basic point we're making is that we can't keep saying the global economy is an unstable or turbulent or non-growth stage, and therefore we are going to be permanently affected. We've got to find answers for ourselves. We've got to constantly ask ourselves, where are our opportunities to grow this economy? And there are lots of people in the private sector, as you know, who are branching out into Africa, into Southern America, into Asia, looking for business opportunities to grow their enterprises. And equally, people from those quarters are coming into South Africa as well. So the basic point here is, can we as South Africans get our act together and get our focus right and stop debating about some of these things, get on with experimenting with any of the many ideas that we have, in order that we can inject some life into our economy and see what works through actual factors. We've had some comment of addressed Mr. Harris's point around the growth part. The new policies are in the NDP, and in the various development plans that Mr. Harris is quite aware of. So there's no new proposals. This is about getting things done now, not debating the issue about how we will get where we want to get. Get things done in the private sector, in labor, in business, and in civil society, and my view is that's the best formula to get ourselves beyond 2% as far as our growth trajectory is concerned. The debt issue, Mr. Fujita will attend to. The one thing we need to point out to Mr. Harris is forecasts are forecasts. Now, with due respect to the many economists in this room, when the crisis came, to its heights in about 2009. One of the debates, I think, in early 2010 in Davos was about the future of macroeconomics and the future of forecasting. Even the economists had a series on this matter. So forecasting is precisely that. You take a number of assumptions, of things that you think are going to happen, you put them into a grid, and you get an answer. The circumstances change, the forecast. So it's not about, you know, a checkbook where you can write a number and make sure you have the right amount of money in the bank account to pay it. It's about saying, understand the circumstances we find ourselves in. If the circumstances change, the forecast will change as well. So this is no sleight of hand. This is no mischief making. It's a change that is necessary as a result of changing circumstances as they evolve amongst us. The contingency reserve, I'll have it there. We also have this assertion from Mr. Harris about underspending. I'm not sure which page it is in, but you'll find in the budget statement reference to 2 billion rands worth of savings from social development as a result of the cleanup. So part of the so-called underspending is in fact benefits accruing to the fiscus as a result of cleaning up people or names on the grant receiving list that shouldn't be receiving grants. And that's excellent work done by the Social Development Department to make sure, and that's part of the evidence for showing the government is doing whatever it can to save money as well. The cost-cutting measures that we announced yesterday, as much as possible, 1st of December will be the implementation date. If there are logistical issues, some might be delayed beyond that point. On the IMF question, two of them, Mr. Simmons will address them. If you let me pause here, I'll come back to some of the issues. Let me hand it to you, Mr. Fusiva, and then Mr. Menon.
Mr. Rashid.
Thanks, Honourable Chairman. Let me try and be brief, because the issue of whether we truly will reach the peak of our debts, 16, 17, 18, thereabout, is directly connected to the question that the Minister answered on growth. And essentially the starting point for budgeting is still what do we expect to be the outlook, how do we expect the economy to grow. And I guess debating only just whether it will peak at that time is valuable. But the most useful debate is whether you believe in the growth forecast that we are putting out. And every time when we put growth forecast out, it is because we sincerely believe in it. As I was saying, the focus and so on. And if you look closer, because not too many people focus 3 years out, some do, but and you would see, I mean, you see a kind of market consensus focus. In many instances, you get out there in the market, some people being a little bit more optimistic even than us. You will get those who are with us and some a little bit more conservative than us. But focus will be focused, and therefore a lot of time it's a question of whether the factors that we take into account pan out the way we think they would. And it has become very, very complex in the world we live in, of a lot of uncertainty, a lot of volatility globally, but also domestically. I mean, if anyone knew that we would have a protracted mining strike of the kind we had last year, I would have paid them a lot of money to tell me that, so that we would estimate that mining contribute what we expected to contribute both to growth and taxes. But of course, I wouldn't have believed that, because I couldn't have anticipated that that the problems that we had would work. So that's the answer lies there. But having said that, the responsibility that I think a Treasury has under the leadership of its minister is to make sure that we are as pragmatic as possible in terms of what we estimate growth to be and therefore revenues. But secondly, we also make sure that every time the stance we take in relation to how much expenditure we incur relative to the revenue we anticipate to collect, that is really realistic. Now, again, the graph figure 2.1 that the minister referred to demonstrates this quite concrete growth in expenditure being expected to be about a third less than the growth in GDP, which means that we are becoming more and more cautious. We have been cautious, but we're becoming more and more cautious. Blocking expenditure to a hard thing, a hard constraint, and accommodating whatever pressure in the allocation of expenditure, which has made budgeting quite interesting but also very tough. Of course, I mean, the minister indicated, I think it was at the press conference yesterday, that his circumstances change, which is something that had been said in October last year, repeated in February. If circumstances change and they warrant that we reconsider what we have put up, we will do exactly that. But we can't do what we think might be necessary if circumstances change, excuse me, now. You can't do that. You can't change the system in relation to what you think might be an unfortunate event that occurs. Now, I believe that this net debt reaching about 43% by 2016-17, 2018, thereabout, is probably, if our growth forecast realize the highest that it will reach. Let me also just deal with the Honorable Mike Amin's question on the equitable set. The equitable set, Honorable Members, why we tend to emphasize that it uses census data? It also uses a lot of data from admin records. To the extent that those are reliable and those are not disputable. For instance, the education component would take the records from schools and the 10th day, compare those to the 10th day survey that they do. The schools have opened the 10th day after the schools have opened. So it tracks the changes in enrollment in a school. If a school fits too many learners, then it will receive more resources. But it looks backwards by head. If a school loses learners, then it will be accounted for relatively less to others. And there are other components that, that take similar pieces of data. Thank you.
The equitable share, we asked Mrs. Wendy Balu in appropriations that a mechanism be developed to monitor the spending of the equitable share specifically municipalities. Where does that money go? Deputy Minister.
Thanks, Chairperson. Minister, you have asked me to answer part of the question that relates to the implementation of the MVP. I'm not too sure whether it is appropriate to refer the member to the document that is related with it for some time. But in the medium-term budget policy statement, because the member claims to have received the speech there, so because he had already prepared his comments, he didn't bother to look at it. In page 4 of the medium-term budget policy statement, we start talking about the implementation of the MVP, where there are concrete measures that I mentioned in the outline. If you have the opportunity to look at the speech, and I think that other members have taken the time to do that, because you started talking about the implementation of the MDG on page 5, where you started, I don't know for the committee with the list, but it's a very long list, and all these are matters that can actually be verified because it's stuff that is already in the documents. Talk about the construction that will be, even though delayed, but it's well underway, rate also keeping a subsequent finances for the magnet and college fund over the next 5 years, where we're placing plans of trains for the two Greenport, 10 protection charges, 10 billion rand that have been approved over the past 3 years, which will support investment amount of 25, and support of infrastructure development. All those, DBSA have been putting 1.5 billion to those projects, and Angola, the chair and committed. These are all projects that actually relate to the implementation of the MDP that the country is actually beginning to implement. That's but one category of the MDP. But then looking at what is also in pipeline with the alignment of all state plans that have come before Parliament and that come to the committee here, and that's the opportunity where it's clear that, that those plans are not aligned with the MDP. All that remains is now for us to exercise oversight over the implementation. But I can go on, Minister, but I would, in the interest of time, let me not go beyond that, but just ask that the member takes time, because I doubt if anybody else has similar contracts with regards to the implementation of that. Part of what we I'm also supposed to respond to the issue of renewable energy and the use of coal. As I said, reducing the carbon footprint, Honorable Shalom. Indeed, it's a matter that we assist with, and trying to find the right balance between using the resource, which is coal, that is abundant in our economy, but also meeting our targets of reducing our carbon footprint. And it is implemented in a cautious manner that doesn't deviate from reducing carbon footprint, but ensures that the source that is happening in our country is also utilized in our transition objectives.
The rest of the speakers, remember, we have 6 minutes left. Mr. Brown, followed by Mr. Johnson, followed by Mr. Thank you,
Mr. The choice of word is wrong. I tend to talk a bit long. on the progress, I'm going to quickly touch on the progress. I mean, it's 6.5, 7 months now since my appointment. When I took over, we only had 2 chief directors. So the whole structure will have 6 chief directors. We have already appointed 3 additional chief directors. Still looking basically for one. I remember in the first month of my position, we interviewed one chief director, and one of the candidates on the ground, moving fast, rising, so I was at that, and within a week, we were already interviewed. So we're trying as far as possible, basically, to fill structure. But we've done an entire microstructure, but at least now with the minister and director general, for basically the input. But in any case, it will take quite a bit of time for us to even fill that particular structure. In the interim, we are doing specific work already in some areas. This detailed capacity building program that one of the chief directors is already undertaking. We've done work already on a price guarantee system that we will be piloting there. So I mean, there is a number of work that's already underway. Maybe let me just conclude that a bit of time. We can at some point bring them the community to.
This is a wonderful question. It's very unfair to have to speak briefly on it. The question is whether our present administered prices don't incorporate payment transfers to future generations because we pay for the infrastructure investments that are happening. I wish that were true. It's not true. And the reason, and the evidence that it's not true is because our saving rate is so low. If it were true, then we would have a lower saving rate. And we would be paying for our infrastructure ourselves and not relying on foreign capital. So why are these rising energy prices, oil prices, water prices not fully paying for the future capital costs? How do we know that they're not? Well, in electricity's case, the long-term price path is upwards, right the way through to the next 20 years. So we are simply adjusting the electricity price upwards to the full cost of electricity. Why did the price start so low? Because in the 1980s, we hugely subsidized electricity at Eskom in particular, through cheap forward power at below market rates, and the taxpayer has bailed out the Reserve Bank because of that. So we started out in the 1980s with energy prices that were much too low, and Eskom is still very, very largely relying on debt to finance its infrastructure. The rising tariff makes a contribution, but we haven't yet reached full cost recovery in the electricity price. In the case of, oil, there is, of course, market determined basic prices of fuel. The administered portion, the taxes, are only part of the fuel price. The movement upwards in our petrol prices has been a result of the international price of oil, not our taxes. But in this case as well, we need to understand that we are still under-recovering for one of the most important cost elements in fuel price, which is our road accident fund. There is a 40 billion plus deficit in the road accident, which is essentially the legacy under-recovery in the fuel price of for that social security commitment. And so again, the fuel price is not a transfer to future generations. We still carry a burden in that price that future generations will pay. And in the case of water, it is the accountants over decades who applied historic cost pricing to infrastructure in our basic raw water tariffs that resulted in the low water tariffs, which over the course of time time will also have to rise if we are fully to maintain and rehabilitate our water infrastructure capacity. So sadly, we are not passing on benefits to future generations through over-recovery in Otero's at present.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thank you, Chair. I'll talk very quickly to the issue of the contingency reserve in this year, as well as the new format of the fiscal framework. The treatment of the contingency reserve this year is in line with how we've always dealt with the contingency reserve. In previous budgets, we've always tended to spend the contingency reserve in full, allocate the contingency reserve in full at this point of the financial year. The PFMA still does allow us to make emergency appropriations if they are required in the remaining five months of the year, and there are cash funds available within national and provincial government for social relief of distress in the case of unexpected and unavoidable environmental economic events. The issue of the format of the fiscal framework is a little more complicated, but to summarize it very quickly, there are a number of important macro policy issues within the fiscal framework that have always been added up as the budget balance, but we feel that hasn't done enough justice to the policies that we are trying to achieve and the need for openness and accountability in terms of the pursuit of those policies. Hence the decision to present the fiscal framework in terms of an operational block and a capital investment block. The operational block speaks to what we often reflect on in our budget documentation, the need to control consumption spending to make sure that a sustainable fiscus is characterized as one that is able to meet its consumption spending from its current revenue any given year. The issue of the investment block is about government's intention to invest much, much more to deal with the social and economic investment backlogs. The decision to include the financial transactions as a third block within the fiscal framework is in line with what with the intention to improve openness and transparency. It brings those transactions, we feel, much more into the public eye. It allows for much more open interrogation of choices that are made there. So should the situation arise, which Honourable Harris gave as an example, the opportunity for citizens and parliament to understand what we are doing, to engage with it, and to advise us on the choices that we're proposing, we believe are enhanced by bringing those transactions above the line. The important thing to note is that we will continue.
And in conclusion,
we will continue to provide the details within those items, the revenue and expenditure, so there is no effort to hide any details there. On the question raised by the analyst, those revenues are essentially the result of changes in the exchange rate and interest rates. So depreciation in the exchange rate creates cash flow, which is recorded there, for example, but it could be quite complicated. We can discuss in detail.
Take them out for a cup of tea. So, Chairperson, since you've been naming questions, I hear Mr. Ross's point about future taxes, but again, normally we don't give any notice on budget day that we talk about future taxes. On the carbon tax, there's a process at play within Parliament, the paper, the comments, to evaluate those comments. But one of the top issues all of us face is there's a lot of sort of campaigning going on. And those campaigners are not coming to the party and saying, what commitments are we willing to make on climate change? What are we willing to do to reduce emissions? Forget about carbon tax. What are we willing to do to reduce emissions? We've made a commitment as a country, as the globe, that we're going to reduce emissions and create a better atmosphere in terms of negative climate change. So, negative campaigning is fine. Let me send that notice to all those sectors that have been coming to you, but they'll come to you with positive proposals. What's the alternative to reduce emissions? And we can then take all of that into consideration. Mr. Momoniat on household spending, I don't know if you can spend 1 minute. What else is left? The credit ratings agencies. So my summing up comment, Chair, something what Mr. Momoniat has to say, is that we've calibrated the fiscal situation carefully. We've taken into account, as we've said, both our countercyclical responsibilities and our consolidation responsibilities. The credit rating agencies will take note of that. One of the things that some of the agencies say, your numbers are fine, your news flow from South Africa is not so fine. So, whether we are in opposition or in government, whether we are in business or in any other sector of the economy, if you want to shoot this country down, carry on with the news flow. Alternatively, change the narrative and talk about how we can cooperate to put this country on its proper growth path so that we can create jobs and we can create optimism and a better investment climate for the country. So, you know, when elections are coming up, we'll have all sorts of temptations. But if we give in to the wrong temptations, we might actually be shooting ourselves in the foot. So, and I'm sure the senior leadership on the bench will guide us in this regard ultimately. But from a government point of view, we want to ensure that we leave behind a proper South Africa on a good sound footing, which we believe we've actually managed in a once in 70 recession. Let me answer on the household spending issue that Honorable Chabalala raised as well. There's a number of things that we have in mind, some of which are being done through GTI, the NCR, through the FSB, and especially all that is proposed to reduce the indebtedness of households so that household consumption can begin to pick up. But also there are lots of nasty practices which I believe your committee could begin to inquire into in the private sector. And we can give you some more information in this regard. Call those private sector people to Parliament, ask them to account for what they do in terms of punishing orders and so on, and how that has a negative impact on people who don't have all the resources to go to lawyers and so on. So in conclusion, Chair, thank you very much.
Honestly, to you and your team, thank you very much. Honourable members, Tuesday, 29 October, there will be public hearings regarding the NPPS. 30 October, I'll set an information of that report, and then in a HLP that Thursday in Gauteng in the afternoon, a special sitting as we process forward. It's our responsibility to go out of the constituencies and explain the National Development Plan. And need that document in that town wherever you are, dealing with your constituencies. That's what we've done in the Commish Department of the West. 15 towns, everyone's got that document. And we lecture relating to the budget. The other point is, all members, we still have outstanding matters to deal with through committees on finance regarding the supply chain regulations that are forced to be adopted. On the part of the Select Committee for Finance, we dealt with this, we are ready to adopt the report. On the manager, we can release you, not to hold you for this housekeeping. I put the question to the... that's off the agenda for the issue of
there's a profession meeting tomorrow morning.
Honourable members, yes, that's special document, thousands please. 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. We select and stand comments on the celebrations, 9 o'clock in the same venue, to deal with the other matters regarding the appropriation and the
charge.
Thank you, Uncle Leach. That's what I think of you.
Well, I'm very flattered that you would work for me, Mr. Chairman. I didn't think I was so important.
Members, as I said, we've got this matter to deal with, the report, adopting the report on the supply chain regulations that we dealt with. I put the question to the Select Committee for Finance and HOP, can we get a rule for adoption?
Mr. Chairman, no, I'm not prepared to move or second it. Mr. Chairman, there are significant problems we have with these regulations, and so we will not be able to support them, and I would like to put the issues on the table with my own.
Thank you, Quarter. Now I'm asking my responsibility as the chair of the Standing Committee on Finance. This matter is now directed to the members of the Standing Committee of Finance. Let me first welcome the colleagues from Honorable Zach, which I don't know. We have been speaking for quite some time. Welcome back. We hope we'll see you until then. And we go on this one. Honorable members, we agreed in the last deliberations that we have exhausted the debate and the discussion on this matter. Today we just put the matter forward for adoption and pass a great word about to do for the Standing Committee members on finance to adopt. Madeline?
Hi,
Honorable Farrell.
Sorry, Chair, before you call the seconder, you need to recognize our hand. Before we approve the report, because we had an issue with the approval of the report. Chair, you say that the debate has been finalized. The truth is, you asked the members for questions to be put to the legal advisor. Those questions were put. There's been no deliberation on the actual clauses in the regulation. And I think the DA, as my colleague Honourable Ross will sketch out, has many, many proposals to amend the regulations. So I don't think we have actually finished the debate on the matter. In fact, we haven't properly considered as the committee should.
I've put before the committee a mover, a seconder, and notes for your concerns.
Sorry, that's not concerned. These are fundamental issues about this committee doing the job. We have not done what you said we did. We have not considered this regulation.
Honourable Pambray?
I would say I move for a second the motion, but I've not taken on this.
Okay.
Chairman, thank you for the opportunity. It is just with great concern that we think we still need to deliberate the regulations. We think we have to get to raise the minimum in, and we've seen today, just before this meeting adjourned, that the procurement are important in these documents, but now it's also not fully in full swing.
Hello, Chair. I think we had an opportunity in our last sitting to deliver it, and people walked out of the room. So we have just completed on this matter, and I propose that Chair, you make it a meeting as major.
Honourable members, I think from the side of the Standing Committee of Finance, we have adopted the rules and regulations. If there are any objections, we will register that objection.
Chair, will you please record the standing view of the meeting?
Thank you.
Chair, I would like, I can't object strongly enough, Chair. The point of this committee is to follow due process and deliberate.
Your objection has been noted. The meeting is closed. Thank you, honourable members.
Now there's a half minute.